You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Manage Mental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. This podcast is propelled by your input and feedback, so please rate and review and leave us a comment on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and as always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry.
What's happening, Blasco? Where are you in the world today, my friend?
I am in Florida. I had a day off yesterday after 8 shows in a row, which I'm not trying to sound like, you know, a wimp or anything, but you know, like I am almost 50. And the two other dudes in the band are 50, right? So like we're a bunch of like 50-year-old dudes, like rolling into clubs doing 2-hour sets, you know, in these venues that have like no air conditioning and like they're completely sold out and packed and like, so it's like, you know what I mean? Like I'm not complaining, like I'm super stoked, but 8 in a row of throwing down for 2 hours a night in hot sweaty clubs, you deserve a day off on day 9.
So a little bit different than the vibe of the Foo Fighters show I was fortunate enough to take in at the brand new venue in Washington, D.C. last night.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
My buddy posted photos of that, and it looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's run by the, you know, the people that do the 930 Club and IMP Presents, you know, big deal here in the city. And yeah, it was kind of a sight to see and really just, yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe. It felt very new, that is for sure. But cool. Yeah, it was fun to be able to get down there and check the place out.
Nice. In the last episode, we dug into some questions from our loyal listeners. That's you guys. That was a cool episode, so check it out if you haven't already. We'd love to hear from you guys, so please continue to write to us at askblasco@gmail.com. This week, I found an interesting article on Digital Music News written by Paul Reznikoff titled, Why a Major Label Doesn't Want to Sign You. This is gonna be killer, so let's get mental. So, this episode, we're talking about major labels and if or if not they are right for you. The major labels, breaking it down: Universal Music Group, Warner Music Group, and Sony Music Entertainment are sometimes referred to as the Big Three. They own a bunch of other sub-labels and have major publishing interests as well. They are big-time global entities. Generally, major labels have more money and stronger relationships with platforms like Spotify. In fact, they own a major portion of Spotify and can push a priority artist into coveted playlists. There are also independent labels, often called indie labels. Those labels have far less marketing power, yet can be a better fit for many artists. Mike, care to weigh in on the indie label side
of
things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think if I've ever had to deal or you know, I don't know if it's been fortunate enough to deal, but I don't know if I've ever done a major label record deal. I've had artists that have gotten, you know, kind of sucked into, you know, a major or a subsidiary of a major. But I don't know if outright I have done a major record, a major label record deal. So indie is, you know, where I fit most of the time and thrive and have those really strong relationships. Not saying that, I mean, look, I know a lot of people that work at majors and they can and are, you know, they can do great work and are good people. But I think just, you know, especially with most of the genres that I've, you know, focused on to date, you know, it's found me swimming in the indie pool as opposed to the major pool. But you've definitely dealt with the majors, right?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, look, I mean, I think that the thought process here for wanting to dig into this particular article is, I still feel like artists, you know, want that major deal. Like they still feel like that's the be all end all of where their career needs to go, right? So let you know, let's break it down. You know, is a major label right for you? And here's some reasons why it may not be, you know, according to Paul Reznikoff. Reason number one, you're difficult and or don't work hard. This isn't the old music industry anymore. There's less money to invest, no more $16.99 CDs to sell, and way more pressure to show results. So artists not only have to carry their weight, they have to work well with others and work hard. Not even music managers are willing to be babysitters anymore. Some of the biggest managers in the business flat out refuse to deal with divas.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think whether we're talking major labels or indie labels, nobody truly wants to deal with anybody who's difficult and doesn't work hard. You know, I think the resounding theme of the business is it takes a team of people to grow and support an artist. And you know, the artist is a participant in that, and you want to be working with people who understand the amount of work that they need to do and aren't difficult. You know, I guess difficult for the sake of being difficult. Some artists, I think we could, you know, classify as, I don't know if difficult's the right word, but just, you know, they've got their vision. They're very, you know, they're very driven, yet they're very, I guess, stubborn in some senses because they know how they want, you know, things to turn out. So I think I'm just trying to make the clarification that, you know, if you're being difficult just because you think it's cool and the thing that a rock star would do, those are the types of people that we surely don't want to deal with.
Do you think divas know they're divas? Like, do you think it's something to where, like, I'm going to act this way because, you know what I mean? Like, is it an inherent thing, or is it a learned thing?
Dude, this is a really, really interesting and great question. And I've had a couple conversations with artists recently, you know, where, frankly, you know, I've had guys in the band say, dude, singer freaking drives me crazy. And I think to be a really great front person and to be a singer, it requires a certain type of personality. And with that typically comes some collateral damage. You know, you're not really thinking about the other guys in the band and their comfort and their, you know, and everything that they might need. You're thinking about you and you're thinking about, you know, whatever else it is that you're. So I guess to answer the question, I don't really think that it's learned. I think that they're, you know, because of the lifestyle of touring and everything that comes along with it, you know, there's certain things that exacerbate it. But I really do think that it's, you know, it's kind of that beauty of what makes the person a star also, you know, comes with qualities that drives everybody else crazy.
Yeah. Totally.
I mean, what do you think on that? You obviously play in a band with a freaking, you know, superstars, I should say, front men. I mean, what is your take on kind of that, the question you'd ask me?
I mean, I've been in bands with divas and, you know, and people that are really cool. I'm fortunate to be in, you know, a band with people that are really cool at present. So that's nice, you know. But I mean, look, by and large, I feel like potentially these types of people are inherently divas, but it presents itself along with success, right? So I feel like as much as you can, if you're that type of a person, if you're making someone money, there's a level of toleration of what someone like myself or Mike will tolerate, right? And at the early stages, if we're not making money, chances are, unless we really, really think that you are just going to fucking blow up, like, if you're a diva at the early stages, chances are we're not going to want to deal with that. And, you know, there was even a case in my career where, like, there was a situation, like a diva situation, and I just had to tag out, man. Like, it just became not, and I was making money from that situation, but it just became something to where I was just like, life's too short, man. You know?
Well, and you know what's really interesting, and of course we can't spend all of this episode on this topic. It could be a completely separate topic for it, but you know, I've watched singers or front people interact with me in a much different way than they interact with, you know, their bandmates. And so I'll establish a really good, great working relationship, you know, with the singer. And then the bandmates will come and say, dude, I can't believe this guy, you know, da 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 da. And we're afraid to bring this to you because we know you're tight with the singer or whatever it may be. So it is, it's just such an interesting, you know, kind of web of relationships that it takes to, yeah, to be in a band and to be part of a team that, you know, supports a band.
No doubt. Reason number two, you're not playing the game right. I wish this world was perfect and everyone got a fair shot, but it's absolutely positively not a fair game. That said, there are ways to game the system in your favor. For starters, don't always go directly to the front door of a major label. An alternative approach is pairing up with a major manager. That manager will then try to get serious consideration from a label. Sometimes those artists are signed to smaller labels, other times not. But the point is this, there are a lot of side doors that people don't use.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree wholeheartedly, and I think is part of pairing up with a major manager. I mean, even in the indie world, you and I both know it, that if we bring an artist to, you know, one of the labels that we deal with a lot, they're going to look at it differently because they know that there's a supportive, you know, team or at least, you know, manager behind the band. And there's a lot of work, especially on the developmental front, that goes into these projects. So they need to know that, you know, there's experience, you know, there's an experienced team that's going to help support that.
Yeah, I mean, I included this one because I just love the idea, because I say it all the time. I just love the idea of looking for a cracked window to open up, you know, looking for a back door. Like, you know, it's like, just especially with the major labels, you know, it's like you gotta develop in this day and age, you gotta develop some momentum on your own, some kind of approach on your own. You can't just walk up and even like, you know, like the emails that we get, man, like it's just like, you can't just necessarily knock on our door and just be like, all, hey man, like I'm in this band and we're looking to get to the next level because we feel like we deserve it or whatever. Like, you know, I get those emails like daily or whatever, but there's nothing attached to it. There's no like what the band is doing. There's no like they're just looking for, like they're just knocking on the front door, you know? And like that's not a good approach in major label world. Like whenever you've got something that someone wants, but you have nothing to offer in return, knocking on the front door ain't going to work.
Yeah, I love the cracked window bit that you said there. And, you know, again, what I'm going to say applies to both, you know, majors and the established indies that I work with. I mean, how many times have I been on the phone with, you know, either the A&R guy or, you know, the person that's wearing multiple hats, but one of their jobs is A&R at these indie labels. And I'll mention a band, maybe I'm looking at it, maybe I just picked it up for management. And that person will say, oh yeah, there's someone in our office. You know, the social media guy has been talking about this band. He's really seeing a buzz online. So you're right. Part of it isn't, you know, it's not only don't knock on the front door, but it's don't ask for, you know, you don't have to ask for the head of A&R to try to get their attention. Go make buds and start to get the music into the people that are working there, because if the band is good and everybody starts playing it within the office, it will matriculate up to the people that eventually need to hear it.
Damn straight. Reason number three, there's no data on you. This probably should be number one with a bullet, because it's 100 times more important than meeting the right people or playing the game right. It's data, as in, are there people listening to you online, going to your shows, following you, commenting on you, remixing your music, etc.? Do your numbers show that?
Yeah, I mean, we're in a very, very different age. And since we're, you know, recording a podcast and I own a podcast network, there's a really interesting thing that happened when the new Apple iOS dropped. And it's that they have a better way to now determine who and how many people are actually listening to your podcasts. So I won't spend a ton of time on this, but the way it used to work is, you know, you've probably gone on, you found a podcast you like, you hit subscribe, and then you forget all about it. But every Monday when it comes out, it downloads automatically, and that counts as a download. But if you don't listen to it, you're not really, you know, making a dent. So the new iOS allows people to find out exactly not only who downloaded it, but who listened to it. And the reason that I'm tying this in is that's the value of data. Now, it's like in the podcast world, you used to be able to say, oh, you know, we're getting 10,000 downloads. Now it's going to be shown that, okay, well, only 4,000 people are listening to it. And that's the real value that people are looking for. And it's the same thing with artists. You know, we are in this age where you can measure almost everything. So people are looking at that, because even if the music is great to our ears, it's got to be great to the people who are supposed to consume its ears. And that's really, you know, what that data allows people to see.
And I want to move right into number four about data. Your data is bullshit. Here's the thing. Labels can sniff that out pretty fast. Oftentimes, there are dead giveaways. And even if they do get interested based on fake data, they're going to realize there's a problem the minute they check out your show and see you in person and no one is there.
Yeah, I mean, enough said. I think that's exactly it. People, you know, and I feel like we've talked about this on past episodes and people have been talking about this forever. You know, it's people will eventually see through anything that is manipulated and fake and bullshit. So, you know, have a soft place to land, because, you know, you will crash pretty hard if that's your game.
Yeah, look, you know, you shouldn't cheat off other people's tests in high school, right? Like, shortcuts only are going to get you so far. And this is the same here. It's like there's plenty of people offering shortcuts and you shouldn't take them. You should build what you have organically. And I know that that takes time, and I know artists are inherently impatient people, but if you want to have a career, you really need to build your base and your value organically. Now, that being said, as much as I don't subscribe to the idea of cheating and flubbing your numbers, there are, and we should probably do a whole separate episode on this, but cheating is one thing, but hacking is another. And for instance, a view on YouTube is a certain amount of seconds, right? That it takes to number up a view count, right? But on Facebook, when you upload your video to Facebook, it is a considerably shorter amount of time. Now, I want to say that, like, on YouTube, whenever you watch a video for 30 seconds, you have to watch it for at least 30 seconds for it to count as a view. Whereas on Facebook, I think it's something more like 3 seconds. You have to watch it for it to count as a view, right? So just as a potential hack, considering uploading your videos to Facebook, driving your friends and your fans there to watch it or whatever, and then use that data to share with people like Mike and I and labels, etc., of, wow, look how many views we've got on Facebook or whatever, right? Now, so once again, that's not cheating. It's, you know, you utilizing the system for what it is and hacking that system to build some momentum. So I find no problem with that.
No, totally. And, you know, part of what you're getting into, you know, is the algorithms that, you know, some of the social media platforms are prioritizing. They're going to prioritize a direct upload on Facebook over a YouTube link. But I think the major point is, even if you've got one video or one song or one thing that's got a ton of metrics, likes, engagement, you have it, people need more than one. and they need it across the board. And so if you're really good at what you're doing online, but you can't translate that into getting people to come out to your shows, those of us that are in the business of supporting artists and, you know, essentially earning our living from supporting those artists, we need to be able to see the totality of all of it, not just, you know, the flash in the pan or the one hit wonder.
Yep. And I've said this before and I will say it again. It's less about the numbers now and more about the conversion, right? Because people aren't paying as much attention because there are so much flubbed and manipulated numbers out there now. It's a matter of converting. And so you can have low numbers, but a high level of conversion, right? I mean, granted, yes, what I am currently on tour with is on some, by some definition, a super group, right? Zach and I are from Ozzy Osbourne, and Joey is from Queens of the Stone Age and Trash Talk and the Bronx, and you know what I mean? Like, so we've got a name value, and but we are out there doing cover songs. My point is that our analytics are relatively low, but our conversion into what we are doing numbers-wise in merchandising and tickets every night is staggering on some levels. So it's more about that.
No, that's a really good point, and it brings up one more thing for me. It's also the demographic, right? Your fans, you just explained at the beginning of this episode you needed a day off because you're approaching 50. Yeah. A lot of your fans, I'm imagining, are maybe not that age, but some of them are, but you got a range of adults.
Yes.
And so a lot of adults aren't using social media in the exact same way that, you know, the younger demographic is. So it's so fascinating, all of the little nuances that go on when it comes to all of this data that's out there.
Yes. Reason number five why a major label might not be good for you is it's not a good match. Step back. Do you really need a major label in the first place? In many cases, a major label will actually set you back. Do you want that? Because even if you do get signed, there's not a guarantee of success. And there's also a catch-22 here, because once you have enough traction and data to get noticed by a major, you also have the beginnings of a completely DIY career. And there are a ton of reasons to stay DIY.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I think every situation is going to be at least a little bit different. I like the idea of, especially if you're young and you get the opportunity to sign to something that, you know, can presumably help you, giving it a shot. Yeah, not everything is going to be guaranteed success, but if it doesn't succeed for whatever reason, you've got time to recover in some senses. Now that, you know, I think that's just sort of my, I think that's sort of my general take is it's okay to take a risk. Ultimately though, you got to trust your gut. You know, in the people that you're talking to, you know, can you see that they actually want to help you and will be there for you, you know, long term, or are they just trying to sign you if you've already got this hype and leverage, you know, solely because they're trying to make a buck?
In terms of the music business, we're living in a really cool time in that majors are nice for certain things, but in terms of the demo that you and I like hang out in for the most part, majors are very much not necessary. And it's very exciting that, you know, you can actually make a legit DIY career these days. And I think that that's exciting. Also too, I'll tell you a funny major label story. So I have a client that is about to put out their last contractual album with a major label, right? And the major has expressed interest in wanting to re-up the deal and, you know, want to do more records with this band, right? But the cool part about this now, right, is that I don't need a major label, right? Like I, at this point in the band's career, like I could go shop around, I could see what else is out there, or I could just, you know, focus on putting the band out like on their own, and run everything ourselves. Because, you know, by the time that another record comes out, there might not be records, right? And I don't And I don't need a major label to put my band on Spotify. Now, sure, there are certain elements that, like you said earlier, that majors have relationships. But if the band is moving, right? If the band has progress, then majors become less of an importance, you know? And I think that there's a lot to be said for, you know, building a DIY career and focusing on that. I think majors are cool for what they are good for, but they potentially may not be good for most.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point is a great one, and it's cool that you've got that experience and, you know, can really analyze whether or not it's going to work for you guys or whether you think it's going to work for you guys long term. You know, for me, in any of these situations, again, major, indie, it all depends on where the band is in their career, what they need support-wise from any team member, whether it's a label, a manager, an agent, what have you, and then, you know, what are our goals? Are our goals to, you know, transition into a sustainable career at, you know, the current level, maybe hope for some growth if we do it on our own, or do we still feel like there's a lot of growth left and the major label might be able to use some of their resources to help us with that? So, yeah, it's cool. I love discussing this stuff, and I know you do too. And we could spend, you know, hours and hours on all of it, but inevitably, I think we've got to go.
That concludes episode 40. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Glasgow1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have to the podcast to me directly at askglasgow@gmail.com. If you have listened this far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
Thanks to you for getting up early on your day off and recording. It's always kind of fun for us to weave our schedules, especially when one of us is on the go. But, you know, other than that, you guys can find me on socials, Twitter and Instagram, at Mike O'Loop. Yep, that's the one. And as Blasco said at the top of the episode, we really would encourage you and like it if you could rate and review us wherever you're listening to podcasts. And last but not least, if, you know, the topics that we discuss here interest you in any capacity, I have a coaching platform at outerloopcoaching.com. Head on over there and sign up, get the free ebook, and pay attention to the courses that we've got. It's really been fun stuff and quite rewarding for me and the people that have participated this far.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Peace.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock Podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.